Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher, 8:06 on this Thursday. It's August 14th, currently 66 degrees under some partly cloudy skies and 65 degrees as well in the Heber Valley. On the phone now with an update from the ABC4 Weather Center, we've got meteorologist Cedric Haynes. Good morning.
Happy Thursday, Utah. It's time for the Wasatch Back forecast for your Thursday. And as we take a look at the forecast, we're going to be looking at partly sunny skies out there. We'll see those temperatures still warming up, but not as warm as what we saw on our Wednesday. We'll see highs in the upper 80s in Park City with highs in the low 90s in the Heber Valley. Now, today, we're also going to start to tap into some of that monsoon moisture, so we will see a chance of a few isolated showers and thunderstorms developing. Now, the main threat with the thunderstorm activity potential for today is going to be primarily some dry lightning and that potential of some gusty outflow winds up to 50 miles per hour. All of that could go together to create a critical fire danger threat for us as we go into this afternoon for the Wasatch Back. So we've got fire weather warnings that remain in effect as we go throughout your Thursday afternoon. Beyond that, as we go into your Friday, I think we'll see more of the same. Partly cloudy skies. We'll see that chance of those isolated showers and thunderstorms developing in the afternoon hours. Temperatures will be in the mid-80s for highs in Park City, with high temperatures in the upper 80s for the Heber Valley. Now, we will see still another chance of some pop-up showers and storms that could produce a little more rainfall as we go into our Friday afternoon. So that could be some good news. But otherwise, looking at temperatures staying on the warm side. The weekend forecast will feature partly sunny skies with a chance of isolated showers and storms developing for our Saturday. This will be both in Park City and in the Heber Valley. High temperatures will be in the low 80s in Park City for your Saturday. Highs will be in the upper 80s to near 90 in the Heber Valley. Once we get into Sunday, though, high pressure starts to reestablish itself across the region. That means we're going to start to dry things out and start to heat things back up once again across the area. So look for those high temperatures to climb back into the mid-80s in Park City by your Sunday, with highs in the low 90s in the Heber Valley. Heading into next week, it's all about the sunshine and the heat as we see those highs back into the upper 80s in Park City, with highs in the low to mid-90s for most of the Heber Valley going into next week. That's a look at your latest forecast for the Wasatch Back. I'm ABC4 meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
And on the phone with us now with Trails Report, we've got Laura Anthony with Mountain Trails Foundation. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie, and happy Thursday, Park City. We have got the Mid-Mountain 50K starting at Silver Lake this Saturday morning at 6 a.m. It will go along the Mid-Mountain Trail pretty much all day. I would not expect the trail impacts on the Mid-Mountain to clear up until probably 11:30 noon. As you roll away from Silver Lake through the day, it'll clear out, and the UOP, the Utah Olympic Park, will be impacted probably through mid-afternoon on Saturday. So plan accordingly. It looks like the Quinns Trailhead will also be busy this weekend with a volleyball tournament and a cross-country twilight meet. It's a running race. Looks like it's run by the high school kids. And the teams there. So the impacts there from 12 noon until about 9 p.m. In the Quinns Junction area. And then also Maya from Wasatch Trails Foundation is reporting in that they've got a dig day at the Jordan L. State Park Ross Creek entrance Saturday at 9 a.m. Bring a swimsuit for a swim afterwards. And they are also reminding folks that they've got a Wednesday 6 p.m. ladies mountain bike ride. Check out the events on the Wasatch Trails Foundation website. And for a full trail report on Friday, that'll be on Mountain Trails website, Facebook, and our Instagram handle. So, have a great weekend out there, and let's all hope for some rain.
Yeah, sure need it. Thanks, Laura. Stay tuned in just a minute. We'll be checking in with Summit County Councilmember Megan McKenna, recapping yesterday's meeting. Mountain Mediation Center Program Director Chris Campbell and Conflict Mediator Chad Ford will have details on an upcoming Conflict Transformation Workshop being held in Park City next week. And from the Song Summit Foundation, founder Paige Anderson and Executive Director Meredith Reed, highlighting the free music happening on the Songwriter Porch, as well as an update on the Summit Rising Program as the Song Summit kicks off later tonight. Taking a look now at some local news. The Park City Council returning after a month-long summer recess. KPCW's Parker Malatesta reports the council will discuss two major transportation projects at its meeting today.
At its meeting Thursday, the Park City Council is scheduled to discuss the ongoing study about the future of State Route 248. City officials are considering several alternatives, including dedicated bus lanes, light rail, and automated guideway transit similar to a monorail. The city is also exploring transit along the rail trail. Public feedback collected at open houses and online suggests support for bus rapid transit along the existing State Route 248 corridor rather than the rail trail, according to a staff report. An evaluation using national transit criteria and other metrics found transit on the existing corridor outperforms options for the rail trail, which would have legal and environmental complications. The technical analysis also found that bus rapid transit is the highest performing option due to factors such as on-time performance and a shorter construction timeline, the report says. The council will be asked Thursday to decide how they want to move forward. The next phase of the study will involve a feasibility analysis and conceptual designs. Later in the meeting, the council will discuss options for future park and ride facilities in the Queens Junction area. Park City already has a park and ride site in Richardson Flat, which provides transit access into Old Town and the ski resorts. But the council is also considering future development on the vacant Gordo property, which rests along State Route 248 across from Richardson Flat Road. Park City Manager Matt Dias said the council is looking at several options.
Do we continue to elevate the level of service at the Richardson Flat location, or do we go all in on a new location like the Gordo property that we've talked about on 248 for many years, or do we even have sort of a two-location scenario?
Dias said he doesn't expect the council to reach a final decision about the matter Thursday. The meeting is scheduled to begin at 4:25 p.m. at City Hall following a closed session. The agenda and a link to attend virtually can be found online at kpcw.org. Park City Municipal is a financial supporter of KPCW. Parker Malatesta, KPCW News.
The Summit County Council met yesterday. In the studio with a meeting recap, I have Councilmember Megan McKenna. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. Nice to see you.
Yeah, so you were part of the tour yesterday with this Utah Senior Advisor for Housing Strategy, Steve Waldrop?
Yes, I was.
Yeah, okay, because it didn't sound like every council member was going to be there.
No, it wasn't all of us, but I was happy to make it as part of our new housing authority. I thought it was a great opportunity to meet with Steve and convey what we're doing here in Summit County and to try to glean a little bit more information and what the governor's office will be putting out in their new housing plan.
All right, so what was the council's message to him?
Yeah, well, I think it was really important for us to show him what we actually have accomplished. I think there tends to be a misunderstanding at the state level that we don't do enough, or we're anti-development, or we don't want any housing here. And so it was really important for us to show all of the work that we have done, and the work that we've been able to do with inclusionary zoning, which, as you know, is no longer allowed. It's been grandfathered in the Snyderville Basin Planning Code, but something that we haven't been able to incorporate onto our east side planning. And so that was something that we really wanted to highlight, how much that has allowed us for, you know, in the Snyderville Basin, we have about 1,800 units right now that are primarily due to that inclusionary zoning. That's 1,800 units of affordable housing. I think a statistic he was surprised to hear was that 16.9% of all of our occupied units in unincorporated Summit County are deed restricted. And that is quite an accomplishment, and certainly higher than any other county has done to this point. And that is because of inclusionary zoning.
Interesting. So what was his response then to whether or not Summit County could update its grandfathered inclusionary zoning code without penalty?
I think he was very supportive of that. You know, it's up to our legislators, of course, but I think he was open. I think he's been going around the state kind of on a listening tour this past year, trying to hear from, you know, different communities and what their unique circumstances are. I think the governor's plan has been primarily the strategy of supply and demand. And so I think it was important for us to show that really doesn't work here in Summit County, and that we really need to have deed restricted units in order to maintain that affordability, that it's not simply just a matter of building more to bring down costs. We really have to take a more strategic approach to it.
So did he have a message for the council from maybe state lawmakers or the governor?
I think it was more listening, and I think he was really impressed. Jeff Jones, our economic development director, and Manny McDonough, our housing manager, put together a really great presentation. And I think he was really impressed. I think he learned a lot. I don't think he was surprised by a lot of it, but I think it was really impactful.
I was going to say, so if he was listening, I mean, as we know, the state has successfully overridden local planning and local control by forcing developments like the film studio, now Dakota Pacific, and what we're hearing, likely soon to come, Cedar Crest. Basically forcing these on Summit County residents against what many didn't want. So, I mean, were you able to tell him, to tell state lawmakers to maybe mind their own business in a nice way?
Yeah, that was a big part of our message. You know, we really asked him to help support the work that we are doing here and to help convey that message, and I think that was understood.
What about the state creating additional subsidies to help support young families and first-time homebuyers? Was that discussed at all?
Yeah, I mean, that is something that we asked for and we hope for. We didn't get a whole lot of information about what the new housing plan will entail and changes that will be made to the moderate income housing plan. But he did mention that they're still open to feedback and suggestions. And that we should be hearing more about their plan this fall.
All right. Now, can the state help provide more research and supply and demand? Because as we know, as you mentioned, simply building more market rate units here in Summit County doesn't facilitate additional affordable workforce housing.
Yeah, that's definitely something that we advocated for. He did mention that the state's budget is going to be tight these next coming years, especially. And so we'll have to wait and see what kind of support we get. But that is absolutely something that we are pushing for. Something to note that the LIHTC funding is expected to increase. So I think from the federal funding standpoint, that is something that we're hopeful and looking forward to hearing more about.
So is that LIHTC funding, is that what's considered the federal voucher program?
No,
I mean, it's tax credits. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It is tax credits. And that's another thing we don't really know yet, but we are definitely advocating for more support with vouchers.
Yeah, because we have heard that some of that's going to be dropped onto the states now, as opposed to in the federal realm. Does that mean more money, or do we know yet?
That's what we'll have to wait and see. But we did definitely mention that to Mr. Waldrop, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, and we know that those low income tax credits, the LIHTC, as you talk about, are just increasingly becoming more difficult to obtain. Is there a way for to make sure that's spread evenly?
That was certainly a conversation yesterday. As the tax credits have gotten more and more competitive, it's become more and more challenging in the state to get these really deeply affordable units online. And I think that's something that they're aware of, and I think they're hopeful too with more federal funding that the state will be able to support more projects.
Okay, any other thoughts then on that housing discussion?
I'd just like to thank everyone that really made that possible, especially Jeff Jones and Maddie McDonough. I think it was a really great opportunity for us to continue to build relationships with the state, and hopefully we'll continue to see more on that front.
Okay, in other business, the County Council appointed residents to fill vacancies on both the RAP Tax Cultural Committee and the Basin Open Space Advisory Committee. So who did you choose?
Yeah, we reappointed Vincent Novak, who has served on the RAP Tax Cultural Advisory Committee. He'll be serving a second term. And we appointed Joe Frazier, who is our Summit County historian, who I think will make an excellent addition to the committee. He's replacing Stacy Kean. And so thanks to Stacy, one of our Summit County librarians. Thank you for her service. Her term is ended, and so I wish both of them the best of luck going forward. BOSAC, actually, we didn't appoint any new members. That item, we actually suspended the functions of the BOSAC. So if for folks that are unfamiliar, that's the Basin Open Space Advisory Committee. It was formed back in 2004, that GO bond, that $10 million GO bond that the Basin passed for open space. Those funds have been allocated, that work has been completed. So really that agenda item was just to suspend it, but to allow for future reactivation if more funds become available for that.
All right, and so who's overseeing the $50 million bond?
So that is still the OSAC, the Open Space Advisory Committee, and they are still working. That was a later agenda item, was just to stagger their terms. So that's the Open Space Advisory Committee for the county, and that they were put in place in 2022 for that bond, and they started out as regional advisory group. So this agenda item was really to dissolve the regions now that we have representation for each of those regions on the committee, and then we'll stagger their terms just for continuity.
Okay. Let's see, any news with regard to the 910 Cattle Ranch? The council was set to approve the baseline and conservation easement for this.
Yes, this was really exciting, and I think a long time coming. This has been underway for 2 years now before my time on council. But what we did yesterday was approve the baseline and the conservation easement, and really to allow our council chair, Tanya Hansen, and our county manager to sign at closing. So that is the next step. We're just waiting on the final appraisal, and then that will kick off a 30 days to closing. So we anticipate in September. So very exciting news. It's been a long time coming, and we're all looking forward to closing that.
Okay. So any issues then with the baseline or conservation easement? Any changes or?
No changes in it. It's really just a snapshot of the physical and ecological conditions of the property, and that will be used to compare in future monitoring, and then just the legal, you know, voluntary agreement that is the conservation easement just defines the uses and limits on the property.
Okay, any other business that you wanted to relate?
From last night's meeting, that was primarily what we discussed last night, not too much on the agenda.
Okay. Wanted to bring up the fact I was just alerted to a new wildfire in the Heber Camas Ranger District, known as the Haystack Fire. It's located near Haystack Lake, south of Washington Lake, west of Spring Canyon Road, about 25 miles from Camas. About a half acre burning, lightning caused. Fire crews putting in fire line and extinguishing hot spots. In terms of fighting wildfires, I was talking a little bit with County Manager Shane Scott. Have you guys had any discussion about wildfires and what that means for the county?
Oh yeah, of course. I mean, this is always an important topic of discussion. You know, with the ongoing Beulah fire right now, which is still 0% contained, last I heard, and I think yesterday they said 4,000 acres. I was just made aware of this new fire as well, and so we do get updated on those. Recently, I don't know if you were at the One Book, One Community, which is a great collaboration of our local libraries. John Valiant's Fire Weather was the pick this year, and I think it was very timely that we had a community discussion on wildfire preparedness, and that's certainly something that's always on the county's mind.
Okay. Anything else you want to mention, Megan?
Well, I just thanks for everything you do, Leslie. As you mentioned earlier, it's that time of year, hard to believe already. Our schools are all preparing to go back in session. And so I just want to remind everyone to be safe with all our new drivers and our young pedestrians on the road. And as a teacher, I remember well this time of year. So just wishing everyone an exciting and safe school year.
Okay. Megan McKenna, Summit County Council member. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, Leslie.
Well, Utah's southernmost ski resort aims to be the first to spin its chairlifts for the upcoming ski season. Bryan Head Resort announced plans to open its slopes November 7th. The Salt Lake Tribune reports that's a week earlier than Solitude Mountain Resort's planned November 14th opening day. Last year, both resorts opened November 7th, but it is not the earliest opening date in either ski area's history. Back in 2022, Bryan Head won the opening day race by opening November 4th. That was the earliest start in its history and among the top five for the state. Early opening days are made possible by Bryan Head State leading base elevation of 9,600 feet and recent snowmaking improvements. Lift tickets are on sale online for the first month of the season, ranging from $14 to $23 per day, including $19 on opening day. And memory serves, I think Park City Mountain opened on Halloween one year. Maybe I'm wrong, but it was very, very close. So I think Park City is one of those top ones. The Utah Division of Outdoor Recreation is encouraging students to cool off the final days of summer with a water activity challenge. The Every Kids Outdoors Water Adventure Challenge includes skill-building activities like learning to paddleboard or exploring aquatic life along a riverbank. That program is to explore nature. Kids must be supervised by an adult during any water activities, and the DOR recommends always wearing a life jacket when near bodies of water. The Every Kid Challenge is a year-long program that awards kids with badges and prizes for outdoor activities. Fourth grade students who earn a Bring a Friend to Nature badge get a free National Parks Pass. A full list of activities and a form to sign up for the challenge is available online at kpcw.org. International mediator and author Chad Ford will be back in Park City next week for a hands-on workshop. In the studio with details, I have the program's director for Mountain Mediation Center, Chris Campbell. Chad Ford joins us on the phone. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning, Leslie.
Good morning.
Chris, maybe you start by giving us a bit of background on the event, when, where, how much?
Sure. So on June 1st, Chad Ford came in and gave an hour-long workshop at the Black Box at the Echo Center, and it was an amazing event. And he's coming back on Friday, August 22nd, from 8:30 to 12:30 for an extended version of the workshop. That'll be a four-hour training opportunity at the Blair Education Center. It's called a Conflict Transformation Workshop. And you can get our tickets at mountainmediationcenter.org. We're happy as an organization to bring him back to town for this event.
Okay, tickets are how much?
Tickets are $150.
Okay, I think if you buy more, you get a little bit of a break on them.
Exactly, yeah. Yep.
So group together, bring your friends, and save a couple bucks. Maybe, Chad, start by just telling us a little bit about yourself and what it is you do and why you'll be here in Park City.
Yeah, I'm an international mediator by trade. I've worked in conflicts really throughout the world, primarily in the Middle East, well, with Israelis and Palestinians. I've worked in Northern Ireland, in South Africa, throughout the United States, throughout the Pacific, and done mediations from everything from family conflicts to organizational conflicts, working with folks like Nike and the U.S. Olympic team, right up to those really sticky social and political conflicts that we face today. And recently, about a year ago, I took a position at Utah State as a professor in a new program that Utah State was founding that year called the Harabi Peace Institute, I'm training students how to be peace builders in home, at work, in the world. And I've been really excited to collaborate with Amount Mediation on a number of different projects now, and really excited about this training next week.
Well, when you mentioned that you teach people to be peace builders, I mean, can you give us just a couple of notes on that? I mean, is it just backing off sometimes, letting somebody else be right and you be happy?
Yeah, I actually think that most of the time that can be a nice short-term strategy, but it's a hard long-term strategy. If we're thinking about conflict, I think that one of the things that is so challenging for people is that we're generally conflict avoiders by nature. The most dominant conflict style in the United States is conflict avoidance. And so that sounds a lot about what you're talking about. I'm just going to back off. I'll just let somebody else be right. It's better to not get what I want, but to avoid any sort of confrontation than it is to actually talk about people. And that's not really healthy conflict. It's not really sustainable over a long period of time. And I think in part, this is why we're having workshops like this, right? It's because people don't know what the alternatives actually are. Is there a way to disagree, to quote Governor Cox, better? Is there a way to be able to talk to people about the issues that really bother us and get to some sort of constructive resolution as opposed to turning destructive? And our workshop's really going to be focused on building a mindset around how to do that and how to think about conflict, building skills around what to do and how to do it, and then some personal application at the end so that we can take this stuff and bring it right back into the relationships that we might be struggling with.
Now, as Chris noted, the workshop is titled Conflict Transformations. When we talk, what kind of conflict are we talking about?
Well, I think that most people that will show up in a room like that are going to be thinking about interpersonal or relational conflict, right? And actually, my experience has been, even when we're on the larger socio-political conflict in the world, that often the conflict itself is relational. In other words, I'm struggling in a relationship with a person or a group of people, and I can't seem to find a way to navigate through it. And, you know, there's a lot of terms that are out there, conflict management, which, you know, essentially to me means I got to live with this. It stinks. We don't get along. But I'm going to try to figure out strategies just to survive. Conflict resolution, which is more focused on there's a specific problem that I'm facing right now, and I just want to find some resolution to it. But when I say transformation, what I'm talking about is transforming not just the way that we see conflict, but actually transforming a relationship in a way that allows it to be more collaborative, allows us to work together through difference, and gets outcomes that work for both me as well as whoever it is that I'm in conflict with. So I'm sure we're going to see some marital conflict in there. We're going to see some conflict parenting with teens. That's a really big one. We're going to see some stuff navigating coworkers and bosses at work. That could be a really big one. And then, of course, we can follow the headlines today and see political polarization in our country, lots of cultural conflict. And I'm sure there will be people bringing in those types of conflict as well. I think the workshop will work well, regardless of what it is that you're bringing into the table.
All right. Well, when you talk about kind of marital conflict, I mean, is it beneficial to have both people in the relationship there?
Oh, it would be amazing if they are willing to do that. That might be a little scary for some couples, but absolutely, we're going to actually work on stuff in this workshop. It's meant to be practical, hands-on. We're going to be role-playing together, and it's actually a pretty safe space to come in and do it. Now, if your partner can't come for whatever reason, it doesn't mean that you can't make major progress yourself, because one of the things that we're going to learn in this workshop is that we are part of patterns in conflict. There are things that we're doing and things that they're doing, and with those things combined, they create a particular pattern. And in most cases, if we're talking about destructive conflict, the pattern that's not working very well for us or others, we're going to talk about how we change that pattern, how we go in and change a pattern in a way that then changes the whole dynamic of the conflict. So even if the other person can't be there in the room, I found that people walk away with enough tools to be able to change that pattern themselves once they leave the workshop.
Yeah, and when you talk about patterns, I think noticing the pattern is sometimes the most difficult thing to do, and that's sometimes like people using always or never. That's a pattern I hear about a lot. which isn't in fact true at all, right? I mean, nothing's always and never.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And, you know, to me, there's a number of different patterns that we're going to actually talk about in this workshop to look at. But I think the biggest one for us to be thinking about is that we typically experience conflict as happening to us instead of it is, again, a pattern that we are engaged in. And that is really hard for people to notice. But most of the time when we talk about conflict, we act like it just happened to us. Like out of the blue, something came and said something, did something, changed something, and it ruined our day, it ruined our week, makes me not want to work there anymore, what have you. Instead of being able to track and see what led to that, how did it get there, how might I have contributed to the problem, and then how might I change the pattern? But yeah, you're absolutely right. We're going to have to spend some time because it is really challenging sometimes to be able to see our part in the pattern. It's easy to see others, but it's really hard to see our own.
So I think you've already answered this, but it sounds less of a lecture as opposed to more of a, participants encouraged to kind of talk out and work out conflict issues, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this workshop's set up in a pretty intimate setting. We're going to have lots of time for participation, exercises, like I said, role play. I don't come expecting to be lectured to. There'll be occasionally talking about concepts and helping us understand those concepts. But I find that you understand the concepts best when you practice them and when you try to apply them to real-world situations in your own life. And that's what we're going to try to do next week.
Yeah. And can you talk maybe just a little bit more? What are some of the other lessons or people that you hope people can walk away with, concepts, I think you call them?
Yeah. So we talked about patterns. We're also going to spend some time on conflict styles. Thinking about what do I bring to the table when I bring into conflict? Now, sometimes we have general styles. Sometimes we have styles that are specific to particular relationships. But again, we're going to look at not only the styles we bring to the table, but what other people might bring to the table in conflict, and then how to navigate that when we just have different styles of conflict, right? We're both trying to get to a solution, but because our styles are different, we don't recognize what the other person is doing as also trying to peacemake or trying to get to some sort of solution. And so we're going to also not only be able to help you recognize your own patterns or styles of conflict, but also be able to recognize the styles of conflict that other people are in as well. And then we're just going to use some good communication tools. Some good listening tools are going to be a big part of this as well. And then we're going to learn collaborative problem-solving practices. So what happens when, okay, I'm listening, okay, I recognize I'm part of a pattern, we still have a problem in front of us. There is still a solution that needs to come from this conflict that we have. What are the best practices in actually working through this collaborative to get to a sustainable solution? And actually find that, like a lot of these things, is a skill. And once we learn patterns about how to do collaboration right, it can be really helpful in us finding solutions to the problems that bother us the most.
Okay. It's a 4-hour workshop, and it's happening next Friday. Sounds like, Chris, people can even get some learning, some credits for what?
Correct. We have continuing learning education credits for attorneys. You can come and apply for that. We've got that all set up. So just register and let us know if you need those credits, and we'll get that worked out for you.
Awesome. Okay. Anything else, Chad, you'd like to mention about what you hope to bring?
If you're afraid, if you're thinking right now, look, man, I don't know if this can really be solved in my life, give it a try. I find that a lot of times people are pretty skeptical coming in. It's a lot of times long-term conflict that we're talking about here. And I think after four hours, I think most people are going to walk out of this workshop with some hope that they can make a difference. And for those budding peacemakers out there, I want to learn how to be a mediator. I want to learn how to help other people do this. I think this is a great start to learn some skills that you could take to help other people transform conflict as well.
Okay. Well, appreciate your time, Chad Ford. Chris, anything you wanted to add?
So you can go to mountainmediationcenter.org to find more information and to get your tickets. Please sign up, and we look forward to seeing you there.
Okay. Chris Campbell, Chad Ford, again, thank you for your time.
Awesome. Thank you, Leslie.
The Park City Song Summit kicked off last night with a fundraising gala. The music starts tonight at the Marquee in the studio with a preview of some of the free events open to the public, as well as an update on how the Summit Rising program is working this year. I have the founder of the Song Summit Foundation, Paige Anderson, along with the executive director, Meredith Lavick. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Paige, maybe first you can tell us about how you did at last night's fundraising gala.
Last night's fundraising gala, we outraised what we did last year. It was an amazing event, bringing together community to raise funds for our wellness programming and also our new event for emerging artists and early career artists, Summit Rising.
Okay. Can you give us an idea how much you raised?
I believe, while the numbers are not quite ready yet, we believe we raised about $115,000, $120,000 last night.
Awesome. Yeah, you had some pretty amazing auction items, mm-hmm. and people jumped on guitars and prints and...
Yes, yeah. And a fabulous Jerry Garcia lenticular that just outraised it all. And by the great photographer Jay Blakesburg, who will be at Song Summit all weekend. He's a stalwart in the Song Summit family.
Okay, so you mentioned the Summit Rising program. Who wants to tell us a little bit more about what that is and what does it do?
Sure, I'll jump in there. So Summit Rising, we created this program actually in response to some younger musicians who had been coming to the festival for a couple of years from Cuba, Trombone Shorty Academy from New Orleans, where they really wanted their own platform, their own festival track to connect with each other, build community amongst early musicians, or emerging and early career musicians. So Summit Rising has about 40 musicians. They'll be performing on our Songwriter's Porch, which is a free community stage. It's open from 9:30 to about 4 Friday and Saturday. Library Field, open to the entire community. And that's programmed with Mountain Town Music, Park City Song Summit, and then we'll have our Summit Rising musicians there too.
Okay, kind of interspersed with all of them, huh?
Interspersed with all of them. And then the other musicians get to perform on our foundation stage, which is within the city park venue. It's across from the main stage. So as doors open during set breaks and intermissions, anyone who has a ticket for those city park shows gets to hear from these great up-and-coming musicians.
All right. So these 40 musicians that are coming in, that's what the song, the Summit Rising, you actually bring them here and put them up? Is that what the money goes
to? So for the musicians out of town, they are fully covered. We cover all their expenses. And then we have a lot of local talented Utah musicians who are playing right here in our own backyard in Summit County, Salt Lake, Ogden. And it's a great experience for them to come together. We have created some dedicated music workshops for them on nurturing both their craft, but also their career development. So how do you navigate the industry? What are the challenges? How do you find an agent? How do you sustain your music career and your wellness? So it focuses on both, because we really do believe we want to support the entire musician, not just them on the stage, but off the stage as well.
Yeah. Talk a little bit about that, Paige, just about the wellness component. There was some statistics, I believe, that you had.
Yes. There was a very large study that was done in the music industry. It included touring music professionals as well as all of those behind the musician, the people that are packing up late at night off stage. And what it found is that over 80% of the industry has a mental health challenge. And then even further, there were 58% of touring musicians knew somebody that had committed suicide, a colleague. 58%. That is a staggering statistic. So what we did is we've got to start younger. We've got to start with the emerging artists talking about mental health, incorporating that into their practice. Because touring is hard. I mean, from city to city, you're leaving behind family, you're leaving behind your loved ones. You got to take care of the whole ecosystem. So we want to normalize that at a younger age so that we can make sure we're rising up healthy individuals. And so that is what Summit Rising is really targeting doing.
Yeah. So is it a drug issue, a drug use issue, or?
Not necessarily. It, of course, drugs are part of it. drugs, alcohol addiction, that is of course part of it, but just anxiety, depression, it's all of the other mental health challenges that come with it.
All right, can you talk a little bit about some of those musicians that you've brought in? You'd mentioned kids from Cuba again.
Yeah, so we have this amazing band from Cuba, Havana. It's Primera Linea. They played last year, so some people will recognize them again this year. They play Saturday night on our foundation stage. Trombone Shorty Academy alumni band. They're out of New Orleans. They're a great jazz band, horns, really fun, a lot of energy. And then we've got a band called Peach, and this is a local, Harry Lawson, born and raised in Park City, Utah. His band will be performing their country folk, I would say. Another band, Theoretical Blonde, they're out of Salt Lake City. They're a bluegrass blonde. I know they're a Salt Lake City darling. We also have some younger musicians. There's a band called Autumn. They're out of Park City High School. And then we've got a lot of great singer-songwriters. Camden Graff and Hudson Marsh with First Tracks. They'll be on our songwriter's porch. Tinsley, Marikai Roses. Let's see, Cactus Tree is another singer-songwriter out of Salt Lake. She'll be on the foundation stage.
Okay, so the foundation stage is going to be a paid performance.
Yes.
But what you've got going on with the songwriter's porch at Library Field, is that going to be just out in the open, or is that going to be where the library patio is? Or
so it's on the Lucky Ones patio, and thank you, Lucky Ones, for helping provide that space. And yeah, there's great. It's programming all day long. Matt Warren from who's a great singer-songwriter, he's with Park City Song Summit. He'll be performing. And then for us, we have, like I said, Tinsley. She's out of Salt Lake. Dan Nolan, he and his family just moved here recently, and he's been busking a lot for Silly Market and around town. Another great singer-songwriter, Lulu. She comes from Salt Lake City. And then the next day on Saturday, our bands are First Tracks and Miss Margaret.
All right. Tell me a little bit about the piano player, that 15-year-old from New Orleans.
Oh, my gosh. Isn't he amazing? River Eckert. So River, Paige can talk a little more about him, but he's going to be joining not only to be part of Summit Rising, but he's really part of the main festival, too. He is a jazz phenom, 15 years old. So he's going to actually be on one of our panels as a panelist, talking about, like, what it's like navigating the music industry at 15. But, Paige, tell us a little more about him.
Yeah, River is amazing. He's coming out with his first album, but he's been part of the New Orleans lineage. So he has worked with George Porter and the Neville brothers. He comes from a music heritage. But the one thing that's great about him, one of many, of course, is that at 15, he's already navigating a lot of this. And so in terms of the music industry, so he'll be on a panel that says what it's like to be at 15 doing this. He'll be able to be a peer to those that are a part of our Summit Rising program. But it also talks about that panel, building a sustainable music career, is what if you're not the person in front of the microphone? What if you're the tour manager, a producer? It gives the full spectrum of careers in the music industry, because not everybody can be the person in front of the microphone.
All right. So again, that's Friday and Saturday, Library Field, 9:30 to 4. People come out, enjoy some free music with some really talented musicians.
Yes, and start your days with Mindful Mornings.
Okay. Yeah, I'd love to give a shout out to PC Yoga Collective, who will be hosting yoga and meditation in the park, and also White Pine Touring Guided Hikes. I believe Leslie might be one of those guides. It's a great way to start your day, and that's free too, 8:30, 9:30, Friday and Saturday.
Okay, people just need to show up?
Just show up.
There'll be signage. Pick your activity.
Okay, and as I rode by this morning, the stage is up, tents are up, and you'll be ready to get underway, tomorrow?
Tomorrow in City Park.
In City Park.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and then we've got tickets available to still all the shows?
GA tickets are available to all the shows.
Okay, VIP sold out.
VIPs have sold out.
All right, so you're going to be at the Marquee on Main Street.
Yes.
Kind of the later nights, but City Park, early evening.
Correct.
To about 10 or so.
To about 10.
Okay, anything else you want to mention?
No, I think that's great. Song Summit Week is here, and we are ready.
We are ready and excited, and just really want to welcome the entire community to get involved.
Okay, parkcitysongsummit.com. Okay.
And then for the foundation, it's songsummitfdn.org.
Okay. Meredith, Paige, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you, Leslie.
Summit County Clerk's Office has released additional voting results for the 5 municipal primaries in the county. The 4 candidates for Park City Council advancing to the general election are Tana Tolley, Diego Zagara, Jeremy Rubel, and John Kenworthy. Kenworthy has a slim lead in 4th place, only a few dozen votes ahead of Beth Armstrong and Danny Glasser. Park City Recorder Michelle Kellogg said there are 22 outstanding ballots that require signature verification. In Colville, Roy Swenson and Lindwood face off in the general election for mayor after beating out Walter Brock and Tyler Rouser in the primary. For Colville City Council, Matthew Boyer, Jeff Peterson, Colleen Goodman, and Andrew Nelson are set to advance to the general election ballot. Nelson is ahead of Stephen Richens by 14 votes. Incumbent Kay Richens is set to square off with James Rees for Hennifer's mayor seat. Both beat out Don Langston in the primary. In the Francis City Council primary, Riley Atkinson, Lindsay Stone, Clayton Query, and Shanna Fryer are expected to move on to the general election. Summit County Clerk E. First said that additional results will likely not be released until the official canvass August 26. A link to the full election results can be found online at kpcw.org. Well, nearly 3,000 residents cast their votes in Heber City's first primary election since 2019. KPCW's Grace Dorfler has more.
This was the first time Heber City voters have gone to the polls for a primary election since 2019. The city used ranked choice voting in its 2021 and 2023 races. About 3,000 Heber voters cast ballots in the primary August 12th, or roughly 30% of all registered voters in the city. Numbers in this story are based on preliminary results released by the county clerk's office late Tuesday night. Incumbent Mayor Heidi Franco and Councilmember Scott Phillips dominated the mayoral primary Tuesday. Preliminary results show Franco received just shy of 50% of ballots, or nearly 1,500 votes. Phillips got 43% of votes, almost 1,300. Mike Hewlett finished third in the race with 7% of votes and will not move on to the general election. Franco enjoyed strong support in downtown Heber. She's running on a platform of preserving Heber's way of life and protecting open space. Residents near Mirfield Park, who live along the southern edge of the North Fields, overwhelmingly backed Franco. She won 64% of the vote in that precinct. Franco also got 64% of the vote in Precinct 103, a neighborhood in the northeast area of downtown. She lives in the Valley Hills area, where she got half the votes. Councilmember Scott Phillips did best in the Wheeler Park neighborhood south of downtown, where he got 58% of the vote. 56% of Red Ledge's residents supported Phillips, who lives in that neighborhood. He is running to advocate for attainable housing and responsible growth. Franco and Phillips were exactly tied in Precinct 207, a downtown neighborhood near Wasatch High School. Those two mayoral candidates now head to the general election November 4th. In the race for Heber City Council, incumbent Yvonne Barney commanded the field of 8 candidates, with over 23% of ballots cast in her favor, nearly 1,300 votes. Morgan Murdoch and Nick Lopez were within 20 votes of one another, each received about 17% of votes, over 900 ballots. Rounding out the top 4 in the race is Corey Noyes. He got over 11% of the vote, with over 600 people supporting him. Those 4 will appear on the general election ballot in November, and 2 will make it onto the council. Ken Davis, Christian Thompson, Lori Rutland, and Jamie Hewlett are eliminated from the race. As of midday Wednesday, the clerk had about 150 provisional ballots, or ballots with minor technical errors, left to count. The results of the primary election will be certified August 26th at 4 p.m. in the Heber City Council chambers. For details of the primary results, visit kpcw.org. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.